Welcome to the Left of Lansing podcast with your host, Pat Johnston. A progressive insight into Michigan's political and cultural world. A, dare we say, entertaining podcast designed to shine a light on how we can best make Michigan's political machine work for the people. And now, live from the Left of Lansing headquarters, located in his attic, here's Pat Johnston.
Yeah! Welcome to another edition of the Left of Lansing podcast. This has been such a crazy week. Sorry this podcast is a couple days late. But I have to tell you, I've just been befuddled by the right-wingers this week who have been arguing that no, we are not running Nazi-like concentration camps on the southern border. No, what are you crazy? We're running more kinder, gentler concentration camps. Come on, get it straight, America. I'm Pat Johnston, getting ready to bring you the 18th episode of the podcast that praises the prolific work of Michigan progressives trying to reverse decades upon decades of backwards Republican rule. It's not an easy trend to reverse, y'all, but progressives are making strides here in Michigan, and that's what I've been busy putting a spotlight on for these last few months. Whether it's new millennials crashing the gates to get into the state legislature like State Representative Lori Pahutsky or State Senator Mallory McMorrow, or maybe it's the activism of groups like Clean Water Action Michigan who are trying to close down the dangerous Line 5 pipeline in the Straits of Mackinac and keep up the pressure to close that down. Or maybe it's progressives like Julia Pulver who are doing what they can to take the battle to the heavily financed right-wing machine. That's the point of the Left of Lansing podcast, everyone, and it's why I decided to start this little project. Well, that, and I wanted my own platform to say what I wanted to say. So yes, there is a little selfishness to this podcast. Anyway, this week I'd like to highlight another smart, strong, resourceful person who helped spearhead the Promote the Vote initiative, which won voter approval back in 2018 here in the state. Her name is Sharon Delente, and she's a voting rights strategist with the ACLU of Michigan. She'll be coming up here in a few minutes to talk about the fight to pass Promote the Vote and why it is so important here in the state. And maybe other states are going to use us an example of trying to open up the voting process rather than closing down the voting process, which is what Republicans around the country have been doing for decades. Promote the Vote, of course, or Proposal 3 reinstated the straight party ticket voting option, allowed for no reason absentee voting, ended a law that said if you registered via mail and it was your first time voting in an election, that you had to vote in the precinct that matched your driver's license. I mean, this, ladies and gentlemen, is one of the biggest victories during the Michigan Blue Wave of 2018 because it specifically, as I said, opened up voting rights after years of Republican games. As I've talked about on this podcast in the past, the whole point of banning straight party ticket voting, for example, was to obviously slow down lines at polling places in heavily populated areas, areas that tended to be Democratic-leaning, you know, in the cities. And according to an MLive article back in 2016, nearly half of Michigan voters used the straight party ticket option during the 2012 election. The breakdown showed that 30% of straight party ticket voters went to the Democratic ticket compared to 19% of Republicans. And as a Detroit news analysis showed, that Republicans benefited from the straight party ticket ban in 2016 just as they had planned. But Republicans didn't end there. No. They wanted to make it difficult for young voters as well. Why? Because younger voters tend to vote more progressive. So Republicans passed laws back in 1999 and 2004 designed to reduce the numbers of students voting. In the 2004 law, it required residents to vote in person for the first time if they registered by mail or by third-party registration drives. Now, this identity protection safeguard, critics say, according to this Detroit News story, can prevent college students from voting by absentee ballot in their first election. Oh, and that was so well played by the Republicans. Make voting difficult for young people. And you know what? Maybe if they make it difficult for young people to vote in their very first election, maybe then those people will feel like, do I really have to vote in the next election? and the next election. You see, you drive down voter participation. That helps the Republican Party. I mean, now, Republicans didn't want to waste their time persuading younger voters to back their policies. Why? Because Republican policies hurt people rather than helping them. So, of course, then they had to devise a strategy to thwart the youth vote. Now, it's no wonder why millennials and Gen Z voters are down on conservatism. Come on, it's not rocket science whatsoever. It's because conservatism has failed them through the years. They're dealing with it right now. They're dealing with high student debt thanks to years of conservative policies that reverse spending on public universities and K-12 spending in general. Millennials and Gen Z voters are dealing with the effects of climate change, which have worsened thanks to years of conservative policies that ripped away protections for the environment. These policies favored big polluters over the people, and the younger generations are not the ones who just have to deal with it. They are getting fed up with it. They've also realized that they're not going to outdo their parents or grandparents in terms of financial freedom. A recent survey by Deloitte showed that millennials across 42 countries and Gen Z respondents from 10 countries showed that generations are filled with uneasiness and pessimism. The survey shows that the percentage of these voters who think that businesses are making a positive impact dropped from 61 to 55% in 2018. According to Bloomberg News, which reported on this Deloitte study, only 1 in 4 respondents said that they expect the economic situation in their countries to improve next year. This low level of positive economic sentiment among millennials is at its lowest in the 6 years that Deloitte has been asking this question. Young people just are not feeling the love from conservative or neoliberal policies that seem to benefit the rich donor base over themselves. They see politicians who fight to keep their jobs rather than fighting for the younger generations. And, you know, as we saw here across the country and as we saw here in Michigan to a degree, populism is what's grabbing the millennials and Generation Z's attention right now, and perhaps to a degree to my generation as well, Generation X. And these younger voters see people like Elizabeth Warren, for example, who are advocating policies that could benefit them. I mean, it doesn't take a political science degree to figure out that if you actually show that you understand, if you show that you can empathize with the plight that younger voters are going through, and that you actually will introduce policies that could help them, well, you might actually get their vote, and they might enthusiastically back you. I know. What a shock, right? In Michigan, for example, younger voters lived through 8 years under the Republican Rick Snyder rule, and they frankly weren't that impressed. I know. Cutting their education funding, passing huge tax breaks for the donor base, and the Flint water crisis didn't exactly grab the excitement from younger voters. Go figure, right? Of course, Republicans fighting to pass anti-women's health and anti-choice bills didn't seem real popular with young voters either. Neither did anti-LGBT stances taken by Republicans. Younger voters, they want change. They need change. They are demanding change. They are tired about being left behind. You see, the baby boom generation, they benefited from policies that helped them, in terms of education, because education funding was much higher back then. Higher education funding was much higher back then. And they benefited from those policies, and they helped America in the long run. But as George Carlin said in a skit back in the 1990s, once they reached middle-age burnout, these baby boomers said, "Give me that, it's mine." I think that's what he said. And so they benefited from everything, and then they took it all away. So that way, the younger generations could not benefit from those same policies. Man, you just have to show that you care, and the people will back you. Now, getting back to Michigan, while Governor Whitmer's 45-cent gas tax isn't exactly winning a popularity contest, Michiganders do understand where she's coming from. They see the roads. They drive on the roads. They know they need fixing. We're just disagreeing on how to pay for it. Now, things would be easier, would be so much easier, if we had a graduated income tax here in Michigan. I mean, that would go a long way in helping to pay things like, you know, better roads or better schools. That could help fund higher education, things that could benefit younger people, things that could benefit the entire state in the long run. You see, if younger people stay here and they get an education here, they may actually want to stay in Michigan. I know, again, what a big shock. Now, There was a recent state innovative exchange poll showing that 76% of Michigan residents support the creation of a graduated income tax where millionaires pay more and working people get a tax cut. This is according to Michigan Advance. 76% of Michigan residents, I'm repeating this again, support the creation of a graduated income tax where millionaires pay more and working people get a tax cut. That means there are many Republican voters here in Michigan that are backing the idea of a graduated income tax. A graduated income tax is in place in states like Ohio, but we haven't seen one since 1976. Now, many Michiganders, according to this poll, from what I'm reading, are ready to move on from the past, especially our younger people who aren't, like I said, exactly impressed with what they've been seeing from 40 years of Reaganomics. They're demanding change. And in a way, they're helping spearhead some of that change, as we're seeing from polls like the one I just mentioned there. So you can see why Republicans are nervous. They don't want to fix the state. They're put in office to serve their big money masters. That's why they are there. That is the point of the Republican Party. And that's why they have set up roadblocks to blunt younger people from voting. But we're starting to slowly reverse that trend, as Sharon Delente from the American Civil Liberties Union of Michigan will explain right after this quick break. You're listening to LOL.
You're listening to the Left of Lansing podcast with Pat Johnston. Upset with Pat? Want to give him a piece of your mind? Or do you actually want to praise Pat for everything that he does? Yeah, right. Just email him, leftoflansing@gmail.com.
Please remember that you can always email me. It's very simple. That's leftoflansing@gmail.com. Once again, that's leftoflansing@gmail.com. All right. Well, now it is time to talk with Sharon Delente. She is the voting rights strategist at the ACLU of Michigan, and she played a crucial role in trying to free up the voting restraints put upon many Michiganders by the Republican Party for years. And Sharon helped get Proposition 3, better known as Promote the Vote, on the 2018 ballot. And not only did Promote the Vote win, but it won by huge numbers. Sharon Delente, thanks again for being on the Left of Lansing podcast. I appreciate it.
Thank you so much for having me. I look forward to our talk today.
Well, first, I was just wondering, how did you get involved with the Promote the Vote initiative? How did it all get started? And was this something that you have been advocating for years?
Well, so my original exposure to voting rights was when I was waiting for my results for the bar exam. I'm a licensed attorney, and you have some time to wait, and it was around an election season, and I started to get involved in protecting voters' rights and understanding what their rights were. That was back in 2004, and over the years, as I have watched individuals struggle to cast their ballot and seen other states adopt different forms of early voting or different methods for individuals to register to vote, it became increasingly sort of frustrating, I guess, quite honestly, that Michigan hadn't adopted any of those. And so I became more and more interested in working on policy solutions here in Michigan. And then I came to work at the ACLU of Michigan, where I was able to both bring my legal expertise and my policy expertise to develop policy solutions that then became Proposal 3, Promote the Vote.
You know, you brought up the word frustration, and I believe that is how many Michiganders felt here during the last 20 years. Is that why it took so many years for something like this to finally get off the ground? It took a little time, but the frustration just really boiled over, and there were many people like you, and there were many other allies who thought now is the time to do something about this, because we know that a Republican legislature was going to change it. It was going to have to be the people to change it.
Yeah, so for a long time, through decades, as you pointed out, the election officials in this state had proposed innovations. They had proposed no-reason absentee voting for decades, and the legislature would not advance those bills. And one of the benefits of having an issue out there for decades, quite honestly, is a lot of people had expressed their support for it. So there had been years and years of Republican office holders holding the Secretary of State position, and they had supported it. There had been Republican and Democratic county clerks and local clerks who had supported it. And also in those decades, you saw states across the political spectrum. So other states around the country across the political spectrum, red, blue, purple, they were all adopting reforms, whether it's no reason absentee voting or early voting. So it was unfortunate that we had to wait, and it was frustrating for individuals like myself who were looking for ways to make sure that no voters were ever disenfranchised. But on the other side, what happened is there was a long history of a lot of support across the political spectrum, across the ideological spectrum, across the geographic landscape, both of our state and our country. So that, in some ways, made it ultimately very easy and a very easy conversation with voters. These were common sense things and actions that we as the state could take that many others had taken before. And so, again, while it was unfortunate to have to wait, it also made the conversation with voters very simple and very straightforward on why we needed these.
We're talking with Sharon Delente, who is the voting rights strategist at the ACLU of Michigan here on the Left of Lansing podcast. I saw a video that you recorded leading up to the vote, Sharon, and you mentioned how it didn't always used to be this way in Michigan, that actually Michigan used to lead the country in making voting a little easier for its citizens. And this is something I didn't even know of, like the voter law, for instance. Is that true?
Yes. So I love that aspect of the story, and it's always been a part of what I share with the public when I've talked about voting rights and every presentation I gave about Proposal 3, that our history in Michigan was really a history of voting innovation. Michigan is often understood and regarded as an innovator in a variety of areas. Obviously, the motor city, but we were also an innovator in voting. And so while now across the country, people have the experience of being able to register when they get their driver's license or their identification from the DMV, This was a revolutionary innovation. And that innovation began right here. Right here in Michigan, we had that system in place well before it became the paradigm nationally. And then in addition to that, we were the first state to have a statewide voter registration database, which seems a little wonky, but it makes it very easy in our modern world where individuals move more frequently to have their voter registration move with them. That also became a national model that was adopted for all states across the country. So we had this great history, and then something happened, and we stopped innovating for several decades. But now we're ahead of the pack again. We are now, with the passage of Proposal 3, we will have, once all aspects are fully implemented, one of the most accessible systems in the country.
Did you and your allies think the vote was going to be much closer than it turned out, or did you and your supporters have a good feeling that it would pass by such a significant margin?
Well, it's always good to see that, right? You can never predict. I think that on the one hand, the conversations with voters were very straightforward and very simple. So you always want to ask yourself, how's it going on the doors? How's it going out in the community when I'm talking to people about this? And with Proposal 3, more often than not, people would say, what is the question here? What is even controversial about this? So that gave us a lot of confidence that we would win on the ballot. But I also think what happened last year was people really realized that this was a common sense, nonpartisan set of policy proposals. And lots of people say that in a variety of different circumstances, but when you see 80 of 83 counties voting to support something, you cannot argue that that's not widespread statewide support. And so I think what happened was we started to return in this state, and even across the country, people noticed this, that there really was a sense that there are some things that we value across the political and ideological spectrum. And voting rights, I think, is one of them. People just feel very strongly that people should have the ability to stand up and make their voices heard on Election Day.
We're speaking with Sharon Delente here. She is the voting rights strategist at the ACLU of Michigan. Sharon, were there big money interests trying to take down this proposal? I'm not remembering off the top of my head.
You know, there really weren't. We faced very little opposition, and there was not significant financial investment in opposing Proposal 3.
Maybe they saw the writing on the wall, too. So, and that's because look.
I think they might must have heard some of those conversations that we were having with voters and saw how friendly and supportive they were.
All right. Well, how about you talk about some of the different aspects regarding Promote the Vote? Because, I mean, it contained many changes to opening up the voting process here in Michigan. Would you mind covering some of these changes for the listeners?
Sure. I'm very good at this. So, you know what I'll do, Pat? I'll also sort of update folks on where we are with the implementation
Outstanding.
Of each of
Outstanding.
These.
Outstanding. Great, great.
So the first was the restoration of straight party voting. Yeah. As your listeners will remember, we had straight party voting for more than 100 years. Michiganders are used to that being an option, and it was taken away as a result of a decision by a court for the last election for November of 2018. But it was readopted, let's say, and placed in our Constitution so it can no longer be tinkered with, and it is back on the ballot. As your listeners may or may not know, May of this year, some communities across the state had an election, some small local elections, and so straight party voting was back on the ballot for that election, for those communities that did have an election. The second thing, very straightforward, no reason absentee voting. For your listeners who have ever voted by absentee ballot before, you'll remember there was sort of a section of the form that you had to fill out that had all these reasons. All the state had to do was delete those reasons from the form. So that was pretty easy to implement, and that was implemented again for the May election. So the next thing is the ability to register anytime. That's what we called it around Promote the Vote, because that is really what it meant. It meant that citizens who could appear in person and provide proof of residency could register at any time up until 8 p.m. on election day, and that they shouldn't be stopped from doing so and stopped from participating 30 days out or 15 days out.
Right.
But with our modern technology, that we could do that up to 8 p.m. on election day. So that has also been implemented and was in effect for the May election. The next one is automatic voter registration. Automatic voter registration is not implemented yet. The changing of how the Secretary of State branches do their work takes a little bit more time than just deleting some language from an application for an absentee ballot. So that, I know that the Secretary of State's office is working very hard, and they have been piloting and testing the procedures and forms to make sure that it's a very smooth rollout and implementation. So I think folks will see that coming very, very soon, by the end of the summer for sure. So the other things are the audit. So Michigan has been having a whole lot of activity around audits to make sure that what people put on their ballots is actually what gets counted. And so Promote the Vote made that, you know, a requirement that the state had to provide and implement that kind of audit. And so we're really happy to see that that is ongoing. The secret ballot was added to the Michigan Constitution, that individuals have a right for a secret ballot. That is something that we'll be sort of seeing. It's not, maybe not something that folks will see a change in immediately when they are voting, mm-hmm. but I know that we are looking to make sure that that right is really secured for individuals, particularly individuals with disabilities who may be using different kinds of voting technology, to make sure that the secrecy of the ballot is equal and equitable to other voters. And then the last piece is the sending of military and overseas ballots by 45 days, and that is implemented. That was something that was in existence under federal law, but it enshrined it in the Constitution so that it would not be able to be taken away if the federal law should change. So that's a summary of what was in there and a summary of where we are in the implementation of all of that.
I mean, those are some major changes right there. I mean, does this mean Michigan is kind of a leader now when it comes to making voting easier, or are other states following Michigan's lead because of what happened with the Promote the Vote initiative?
You know, one more thing I should add, it wasn't through Proposal 3, but it's always something that I mentioned. The legislature passed and the governor signed bills to implement online voter registration.
Yes.
So that also is something that the Secretary of State has to build the infrastructure for that, and that's happening and not yet rolled out. But I think folks should keep their eyes out for that coming soon. So your question is kind of twofold. Number one, Michigan really now does have the gold standard of election reform, which is register anytime. Allowing individuals to register at any time up until 8 p.m. on election day really means that registration is not a barrier for people. And that means that for folks, quite honestly, I'm a busy working mom, two parents, and both of us are working. Things don't always happen exactly by the deadline I mean for them to happen. And so it's just the reality that for some folks, getting something done exactly by 30 days before the election was a challenge. You may be moving close to that time period. Again, for young people who are moving more frequently or away at school, it just presented a challenge for some people. And so removing that barrier and ensuring that there's security, you have to appear in person, you have to provide proof of residency, policy. You can't just be a fictitious person and register. But if you are a real person and you're showing up and you're providing me some documentation, we can let you participate in the voting process. So Michigan has the gold standard reform now. I think you'll see it will significantly increase turnout in 2020. I think we're probably on pace to have record turnout in 2020 anyway. So it'll be very interesting to see what part Proposal 3's reforms have in that. But then one other thing that you said, Pat, was whether you asked whether or not other folks around the country are looking at that and following or interested in following it. And that is really, really was the case. A number of individuals reached out to me, reached out to the ACLU and other partners who were involved in Proposal 3 about doing what we did here in Michigan. And I think the reason is because, again, we implemented the gold standard reform, and it was not controversial. It was nonpartisan. People fully supported it. And I think that was the lesson for a lot of voting rights advocates around the country, that if you sort of tamp down the partisanship when you're talking about voting access, that people actually across the board are supportive. So we'll see. We'll see. I'm excited to see whether or not there'll be some copycat ballot initiatives in other states.
Right. Well, and but Sharon, I mean, it did become a partisan issue. I mean, the straight party ticket ban was a bill that was passed by Republicans and then upheld, as you said, in the court. I believe it was the past election that the temporary ban was still on, right? That in the 2018 election,
right? You could not vote straight party in 2018.
And from my reading, it did sort of benefit one party over the other, that being Republican Party over the Democratic Party. What were some of the reasons given for why we needed to ban straight party ticket voting? Because it never really made sense to me, but maybe you could talk about that.
Let me distinguish, Pat, from elected officials and their partisanship versus voters.
Okay.
Right?
Okay.
So one of the beautiful things about a ballot proposal is you go straight to the voters. And so I think that was really something that we learned and that other advocates around the country have learned, is that, you know, elected officials may want to make voting very partisan and voting rights very partisan, but that's not how people feel about it. You know, it's sort of what's the values of our country is that people should have free and fair access to the ballot. So I think that's what I would distinguish there. In terms of straight party voting, the one that comes to mind most was that proponents felt that individual voters should consider their choices more or and I, you know, I'm uncomfortable, Pat, even with restating that.
Yeah, right, right.
I do not think that's the kind of big brother sort of patriarchal approach that voters appreciate, quite honestly, right? Voters are exactly as educated as they choose and they feel they need to be to make their choices, and we are not going to implement some litmus test for how educated they need to be about candidates in order to have their right to vote. And in fact, you know, the constitutional framework of voting rights prohibits that kind of behavior. We long ago outlawed literacy tests and poll taxes and stuff. And so I don't subscribe to that view, and I don't think the voters do, most importantly.
Sharon, am I going out of bounds by saying that I always thought the reason the law was passed was to ensure that it would help slow down the voting process, thereby ensuring that there would be longer lines, especially in more heavily populated areas, and that would discourage maybe some people wanting to stay in line to vote?
I can't tell you why. You know, I cannot see into the hearts and minds of individuals who passed the bill.
Okay.
What I can say, though, and I think this is relevant, Pat, is that as a voting rights advocate, we have to concern ourselves with direct suppression of voters and indirect suppression. And what do I mean by indirect? As you point out, creating long lines, making it more difficult, requiring people to jump through numerous hoops, those are barriers, and they will, quote, suppress the vote. They will reduce the participation of some individuals. If I can just go back for a second to what you pointed out about Michigan's history. So Michigan created the system for allowing you to register at the driver's license agency. Prior to that, you had to go to your local clerk's office. So that whole innovation was designed in order to make it more streamlined and simple and to avoid asking citizens to do one extra step, go to an office that they didn't otherwise have to go to. And so I think when we think about this context in the modern age, we have to remember that for a long time of our history, we thought removing those barriers and administrative steps or long lines, that was a good thing. We thought that was a good thing, that we should use our voters' time wisely and make the process as efficient and streamlined as possible. And I'm hoping with Proposal 3 here in Michigan and around the country, we're getting back to that space where elected officials recognize that's what the voters want and that's what they expect.
All right. Hey, Sharon, listen, I know I've kept you a little bit over. If I can just ask you one more question, because you brought up the no reason absentee balloting aspect of Proposal 3. That could be huge for students, if I'm not mistaken, correct?
Yeah. So one of the things that Proposal 3 did is it gave all registered voters an equal right to an absentee ballot. And it's expressly said that they could get that absentee ballot either by the mail or doing it in person, that it was up to them to choose. And this is a huge impact for young people because, as I'm sure you know, and really any of us who care about voting in Michigan, Michigan has really just had a really laborious system for young people who are away at school to try and vote. Basically, you were choosing between two bad options. There was a lot of concern and sort of urban myths about what was going to happen if you changed your address. And it was just a lot of complication. Young people really overcame the challenge in November 2018 and turned out at rates that we've really never seen. But Proposal 3 made all those young people who are away at school have an equal right to vote by absentee ballot through mail. So they can now keep their registration, if they want, at their home address, and they can use the whole mail system and the mail process to vote, or they can choose to register on their campus and just walk to the local polling location. So it really frees them up to have all the options that other voters in the state already enjoy.
All right, fantastic. We've been speaking with Sharon Delente, who is the voting rights strategist at the ACLU of Michigan. And Sharon, if people would like to find more information about you, or if they'd like to get more involved with ACLU of Michigan, how can they do so?
Yeah, so I would direct folks especially to our voting section of our website. It's aclumich.org/voting. That's aclumich.org/voting. You can find the first and only comprehensive Know Your Rights guide since we passed and adopted Proposal 3. So that's up to date. How do you register? If you're a student, all the things that you've been asking me about, Pat, it's all in there. And then also we have an opportunity for folks to get engaged at the local level. One of the things that folks don't realize is we changed all these rules at the state level, but there's a lot that local clerks can do with their communities to ensure full and equal access. And so the website has information on how you can engage with your clerk.
Sharon, thank you so much for your time. I greatly appreciate it. It's been awesome having you here on the Left of Lansing podcast, and I hope that you consider coming back again.
Oh, thank you. I would love to come back again. Thanks for having me.
A podcast devoted to helping fix the damn roads, because Pat's tired of dodging potholes. It's the Left of Lansing podcast. The Left of Lansing podcast is available on iTunes, Spotify, Stitcher, Google, and of course on leftoflansing.com. Now, back to Pat Johnston.
Special thanks again to Sharon Delente from the American Civil Liberties Union of Michigan for being on the podcast this week. She certainly knows her stuff, and it's a relief to know that such a smart person is working on behalf of ensuring everybody, and I mean everybody, has a fair shot at casting a ballot. I understand Sharon didn't want to sound too partisan, but she and her colleagues at the ACLU of Michigan and many other activists and organizations out there have worked diligently to reverse the decades of voter roadblocks and disenfranchisement by the Republican Party. Remember that. It's the Republican Party that makes voting more difficult for minorities. It's the Republican Party that makes voting more difficult for younger people. As I've said before, if Republicans truly have the better ideas, I mean, come on, they always say they do, right? Then why aren't they confident in their ideas? Why aren't they confident their ideas can win the ballot box? Why? Simple. They're unpopular. Thank you, Sharon Delente. Thank you, ACLU Michigan. Thank you, League of Women's Voters Michigan. And thank you to the countless others who fought to pass Promote the Vote. Thanks to your work, thousands and thousands of Michiganders will let their voices be heard coming up here in 2012. Last call time here on Left of Lansing. If you recall, Michigan Republicans, aided and abetted by the Michigan Chamber of Commerce, passed draconian work requirements for Medicaid recipients. The Medicaid expansion, which then State Senator Gretchen Whitmer played a key role in passing, helped provide hundreds of thousands of Michiganders with health insurance care. I mean, that was huge. It was by far the best piece of legislation Republican Governor Rick Snyder passed into law. And I'll say this, for all of his faults, Snyder seemed to at least somewhat grasp the notion that a healthier workforce would help Michigan, while many of his other Republican governor colleagues were busy denying Medicaid coverage to their residents, Snyder expanded it, again with the help from Gretchen Whitmer. Huh. I just gave a little credit to Rick Snyder for something. Ugh, that's not right. Anyway, the Medicaid expansion, passed back in 2013, gave basic health care to people earning around $16,000 or over $34,000 for a family of four. The program, called Healthy Michigan, was a noteworthy success, with over 672,000 Michiganders insured. I mean, that was big. A healthier society, everybody, equals a healthier workforce. It makes people better workers, which in turn helps them make money so they can become better customers. I know, I'm sort of channeling my inner Jimmy Stewart from It's a Wonderful Life, but, you know, giving poor and working Michiganders health insurance care kind of helps all of us. The University of Michigan released a study recently showing that almost half who enrolled in the Healthy Michigan program ended up getting jobs. And the program helped cover another 11% who can't work due to physical or mental health reasons. And, you know, is it really reach to say that thanks to the Healthy Michigan program, our state's unemployment rate dropped through the years? Think about it. But that didn't stop the Michigan Chamber of Commerce and its Republican lackeys from passing work requirement laws. You see, working people in the state just had it too good. They had it too good there for a while. It was time to punish them because, well, they're not part of the in crowd. The bill that Michigan Republicans passed and Rick Snyder signed into law. See, all right, there. I'm back to ripping on one of the worst governors Michigan's ever had again. This law forced people in the Healthy Michigan program to work an average of 80 hours per month. And people at or above the federal poverty level had to pay 5% of their income on health insurance. The bill also required recipients to get flu shots, which is kind of strange, considering how much the Republican Party has been coveting the anti-vaxxers nowadays. You know, in the same Detroit news story from last December, it says that the new work rules could apply to roughly 540,000 able-bodied adults, according to the nonpartisan House Fiscal Agency, which projects that about 5% to 10% of recipients will drop out or leave the program as a result. Pish posh, said the Republicans, and they still passed the law. Oh, and they got a helping hand from the Trump administration, which okayed the new work requirements. Because, you know, when you think of hard work, you think of that one guy who's played golf over 100 times at his golf courses during his presidency. Anyway, Republicans wanted to treat the Medicaid expansion as a work program. When it wasn't designed to be a work program, it was designed to be a health insurance care program. Like I said, the Healthy Michigan program was a ringing success for Michigan and for her people. But that drives the radical right-wing leadership in Lansing absolutely insane. They believe that only lazy people use Medicaid. And unlike the rich or corporations who influence these hard-working legislators, the middle and poor classes really can't afford lobbyists to fight on their behalf. And this week we learned that people from a handful of other states that passed similar anti-worker and anti-health insurance care laws are hurting. Vox published the story about a study released by the New England Journal of Medicine showing that Medicaid work requirements did indeed push people off the Medicare rolls. This Harvard study focused on Arkansas's work requirement policy. The Harvard researchers found the percentage of low-income Arkansas adults ages 30 to 49 who said that they had Medicaid or Marketplace coverage fell from 70.5% in 2016, before the state put its work requirement in place, to 63.7%. Researchers also discovered the uninsured rate for the same population increased from 10.5% in 2016 to 14.5% in 2018. And employment declined among this group over the same time frame from 42.4% to 38.9%, just as many people had predicted. Now, a federal judge recently blocked Medicaid work requirements in Arkansas and Kentucky. Unfortunately, though, that doesn't affect Michigan's law unless someone here decides to sue. But we should not be shocked by this news. This is exactly why the Republican Party exists. It's here to serve its corporate masters. It's here to follow the marching orders of the elite class. And the elite class wants government handouts for them. They don't want government providing the tools to help working Americans live healthier and productive lives. That's why the Republican Party exists. It's not a party that supports the people. It's a party that supports keeping the present failed oligarchy in the place. And they'll even elect a TV reality show host who defrauded students and veterans from his quote-unquote university and who's been accused of sexually assaulting a number of women. They'll still support a guy like that because he'll serve the purpose of fattening up their pocketbooks by stealing from the rest of us. That's the game they've been playing for years, my friends. It's a game that's been rigged against us for years. But we can take back control of that game. We're already starting to do that here in Michigan. But as we've witnessed, we've got a long, long, long way to go.
You're listening to the Left of Lansing podcast. The music you're hearing is by Wanderbeats. To hear more, visit wanderbeats.net. That's wanderbeats.net. Now back to Pat Johnston.
Hey, man, you know, I realize I've got so much more news I'd like to share with you, but unfortunately, I have so little time. Remember, if you'd like to email me, it's leftoflansing@gmail.com. I'm on Twitter at leftoflansing, plus you can find me on the Facebook page as well. Thanks again to Sharon Delente from the ACLU of Michigan for being on this week's podcast. Sharon, you knocked it out of the park. It was a pleasure having you on. And to my fellow LOLers out there, please contact me with stories that you think should be part of this podcast. I had a listener this week give me a story, which I will bring up next week. And trust me, it'll make you feel confident that some young people out there are indeed getting it. Have a good week, and I'll talk with you next week. Oh, and good luck to the Michigan Wolverines baseball team, who are making a historical run in the College World Series. Remember, everybody, take the battle to them. Thank you, Michigan.
The Left of Lansing podcast was produced by Pat Johnston, written by Pat Johnston, researched by Pat Johnston. Just kidding, this thing isn't researched. And broadcasted by Pat Johnston. Technical assistance provided by the wonderful Dr. Heather. And don't forget to visit leftoflansing.com for more news and information and Pat's musical taste, if you can handle it. Thanks again for listening to the Left of Lansing podcast.